This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
There are so many patients who are being referred throughout the whole country to come here for treatment, and they're not getting that treatment. As soon as they get into hospital, they're asked to start going buy drugs, syringes, and things like that from the private companies.
That's Dr. David Chimuka talking about medical equipment and medicine shortages in Zimbabwe. Details coming up. Also, Nigerian officials have called off the search and rescue effort at a collapsed building in Lagos. And Ethiopian officials have sent flight data recorders to investigators in Paris. We'll have all these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, French President Emmanuel Macron says time is running out for nations to address climate change. Ruben Chama reports that Macron, who is on a four-day visit to East Africa, spoke at a major United Nations meeting on the environment in Nairobi.
The French president urged governments around the world to initiate policy changes that will curb the adverse effects of climate change.
More united now, because everybody in this room is part of a very united family whose fight against climate change for environment is the best time. When we decided to launch this initiative, suppose December 2017, some people in the room decided to leave after Paris Agreement, but the others wanted to remain committed and to deliver.
President Macron, who arrived in Kenya on Wednesday, joined Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta as co-chairs at the One Planet Summit on the sidelines of the United Nations Environment Assembly. Kenyatta praised world leaders and other partners gathered in Nairobi to seek sustainable solutions to environmental pollution and degradation.
Today we're here to make pledges. Today we're here to show commitment. And on behalf of Kenya, our government and our people, I am pledging that by 2022, we want to reach a minimum of 10% forest cover in our country as a way of also ensuring that we play our part both as a government and as a people and as members of the global community.
At the summit this week, the World Bank and the African Development Bank pledged to increase support for efforts to help African states adapt to climate change and reduce its damaging effects. Akinwumi Adesina is the president of the African Development Bank.
The way we're doing it is that we're bringing together all of Africa's financial institutions, the central banks, the stock exchanges. We're bringing together everybody to be able to direct financing more to climate change. The money is there. You take today the amount of sovereign wealth funds, pension funds, insurance pool of funds in Africa, it's roughly about $1.2 trillion.
Wanjiru Kamau Rotenberg is the director of the African Women in Agricultural Research and Development, an organization that invests in empowering African women scientists and research institutions.
We often talk about women and youth when it comes to agriculture and climate change as being on the farms, but I think it's also important to shift the narrative to understand the importance of women and youth in scientific research to help this continent, especially our smallholder farmers, adapt.
The World Bank Group is also stepping up its climate support for Africa. The global lender said it would provide $23 billion for Africa in additional funding for climate adaptation and mitigation between 2021 and 2025. Ruben Chama, reporting for VOA News, Nairobi.
Nigerian officials have called off the search and rescue effort at a collapsed building in Lagos that included an elementary school. Nigerian rescuers have been working to find any remaining children or adults trapped in the wreckage of a multi-story building that collapsed yesterday. About 40 people have been rescued alive at the site in the Itafoji area of Lagos, but officials said they had reached the building's foundation and cleared away debris. Local rescue officials say at least 9 bodies have been recovered. Reports say there were 172 students registered at the school. Large crowds gathered in the area, hindering rescue efforts because there is limited room for earth-moving equipment. Reuters reports that it spoke to a relative of the owners of the building who said not all the students were in the building at the time of the collapse. He said he did not know how many students might have been left. In East Africa, a sustained cycle of erratic weather and severe drought, now in its 5th year, is wreaking havoc on herders and farmers and threatening the region with food shortages and disease. To help understand the workings of the drought, its relationship to climate change, and the humanitarian crisis that is unfolding, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Thomas Jepsonle. He is the East and South African Emergencies Director at aid agency Save the Children.
Yeah, we've had 4 or 5 years now of a failed or poor rainy season. There was a big chunk in the middle from end of 2016 through early, mid-2018, where there was just no rain at all. And that then led to a lot of displacement and a lot of migration towards urban centres or areas where there was a little bit of water. We had better than expected rainfall towards the end of 2018. We then started to get meteorological reports of an El Nino phenomena again occurring in 2019.
Why was that a surprise?
From my understanding, the models that had been previously used to project El Nino and La Nina phenomena, they were not performing as the previous models were. So depending on where you were in the region, the rainfall was either very late, in which case the locations where the herders were expecting the rainfall, it wasn't falling when they were thinking. And for the agricultural communities, if they start planting their seeds and the rains are late by a month or two, those seeds are no longer viable. And that's where you start to see food insecurity on a very large scale. Malnutrition suddenly becomes a very, very problematic situation to be dealing with. And the children are some of the most vulnerable to be affected by that. Their bodies are much less resilient and resistant to hunger.
So what has been the humanitarian aspect of this cycle of drought over the past couple of years as compared to previous droughts?
At the beginning of 2017, we were able to plot the trajectory alongside the similar period prior to the 2011 famine. Now, for those who remember, there were 250,000 people who died in 2011 in Somalia because of a famine that was climate-induced. In 2017, we listened to those early warnings and we saw the trajectory that we were going down. And as an international community, we responded. And I'm very pleased to say the humanitarian response successfully averted a famine. Save the Children's response alone reached 2.5 million people, of which 1.6 million of those were children. Now, at the same time, when people, children and adults, are weakened by hunger, disease spreads a lot more quickly. And so you have a huge problem of disease outbreaks. We have measles, we had cholera. I heard stories of mothers carrying their children up to 100 kilometers to try and find some form of assistance to keep their children alive. And some of the biggest pride I take is from watching some of the Somali staff that we have who are on the front line of this and are doing all they can.
So what's the outcome? What do you predict?
It's on a bit of a knife edge, to be very honest with you. The next few months will be very, very critical. On a global scale, there are competing priorities. Sad to say, but East African hunger into a 5th year does not make media headlines in the same way that a Syria response does or a new conflict somewhere else in the world.
But on a personal level, what's it like to do your job every day and see all this suffering and threat close up the way you do?
So I became a father halfway through this response, and very honest with you, it's very, very, very tough, particularly interacting with parents of children who are suffering. Children are literally in the medical definition of starving.
And it's your position that climate change is at the root of this crisis?
Yeah, I would say what we're witnessing and the irregular weather patterns across the eastern southern Africa region is climate change in action. And the people that are reporting to the hospitals that we support are the result of that. They are the faces of climate changes.
That was Thomas Jepson Lay of aid agency Save the Children, speaking with VOA's Adam Phillips from Nairobi, Kenya. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Fifteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Nigerian officials have called off the search and rescue effort at a collapsed building in Lagos. And in East Africa, a sustained cycle of erratic weather and severe drought, now in its fifth year, is wreaking havoc on herders and farmers and threatening the region with food shortages and disease. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Ethiopian officials have sent flight data recorders to investigators in Paris to find out more about what caused Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 to crash, killing at all 157 people on board. Families of those who died continue to mourn today. Some visited the area where the plane crashed looking for their loved ones. Others voiced anger at a meeting with Ethiopian Airlines today. They said the airline has not provided them with enough information about what happened. Family members are frustrated that they cannot find anything of the people they have lost. The airplane involved, the Boeing 737 MAX 8, has been suspended from service around the world. The United States Federal Aviation Administration grounded the aircraft and another version, the 737 MAX 9. France's Bureau of Inquiry and Analysis for Civil Aviation Safety, or BEA, has said it will analyze the plane's flight data recorder and cockpit voice recorder. A BEA spokesman said the condition of the recorders is not known and it could take up to several days to analyze them. Under international rules, Ethiopia leads the investigation, while the BEA will analyze the data. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board will also have an important role because Boeing is a U.S. company. Investigators are expected to compare information about the Ethiopian crash with data from a crash of the same model last October in Indonesia. Attention will focus on an automatic system meant to prevent the aircraft from stalling. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration says Boeing is working on a software update for the plane. The Boeing 737 MAX 8 is the latest version of the world's most popular large passenger jet. Local publications in Zimbabwe report that doctors started a new labor action because of difficult working conditions at the country's biggest public hospital. Senior doctors say they have halted all but emergency operations as they try to raise awareness on the dire situation they face. Reporter Kudza Zenawashi has more details.
Medical doctor David Chimuka spoke to journalists today at Zimbabwe's biggest public hospital, Parire Nyata Hospital, prior to meeting the Minister of Health.
We are just complaining about the availability of useless equipment and no drugs. There are so many patients who are being referred throughout the whole country to come here for treatment, and they're not getting that treatment. As soon as they get into hospital, they're asked to start going to buy drugs, syringes, and things like that from the private companies.
Chimuka said they are appealing to government to intervene as the situation on the ground doesn't create a working environment for his peers.
We're just trying to ask the administration at Parire Nyata, the administration in our ministry, to help us have enough equipment and enough drugs to treat our patients. We've got equipment which we use to ventilate the patient when we're operating. There are drugs we need to make the patient sleep. They are not there. There are no painkillers. And how do you cut somebody and you don't give them a painkiller at the end of the operation? It's been cruel and unreasonable to the patient.
While senior doctors say they will not be striking, Chimuka says they will only be doing emergency operations and have stopped doing elective operations. He says 80% of the operations they do are elective. The doctors later met with the Minister of Health, Dr. Obadiah Moyo, along with senior hospital management. Minister Moyo said he was disappointed with how the situation was unraveling at the hospital.
I feel equally emotional about all this. Really, I'm not supposed to be micromanaging. I also find myself being frustrated sometimes and have to end up doing management work because of lack of response. Yes, the main issue is foreign currency, but there are means and ways in which we can be able to speed up issues. I have said I want a healthcare team who are well supported.
The shortage of foreign currency in Zimbabwe has resulted in shortages of drugs and critical healthcare equipment. But Moyo says they should be able to work around the foreign currency shortage and external sanctions imposed on Zimbabwe. Going forward, the minister says there should be a regular inclusive health forum which looks to address all health sector challenges. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
Botswana's High Court is hearing an application seeking changes to the country's criminal law that makes homosexuality illegal. Botswana is considered one of Africa's most democratic nations, but homosexuality is illegal under the country's Penal Code of 1965. An unidentified person legally challenged two parts of the code that calls for punishment of up to 7 years in prison. In 2016, the country's appeals court ruled that the government was wrong to refuse to register an organization that represents homosexuals and others who are allied over sexual identity. The group Lesbians, Gays and Bisexuals of Botswana brought the court action. President Mokwetsi Masisi has spoken in favor of observing the rights of homosexuals when he spoke at a meeting on gender-based violence in December. He said, just like other citizens, they deserve to have their rights protected. Some African countries have changed laws banning or punishing homosexuality. Last month, Kenya's High Court postponed a ruling on whether to end the country's law against homosexual sex. Human Rights Watch says child marriage in Africa often ends a girl's education, exposes her to domestic violence and grave health risks, and also traps her in poverty. The Research and Advocacy Unit has estimated that between 2015 and 2025, if trends continue, 142 million girls worldwide will marry before they reach the age of 18. Last week in Zimbabwe's Mashonaland province, a young woman's death once again put the spotlight on the highly emotional issue of child marriage. Adigando gives us more on the issue.
The year is 2017 and teachers call 15-year-old Sophia Mdimu a quiet, hard-working girl. But her dream of becoming a nurse is shattered because she must become the fourth wife of a much older man in a polygamous marriage. Her parents, both members of the Apostolic Church, have sanctioned the marriage. Sophia's approval is not required. This is the way of the sect, despite a 2016 Constitutional Court ruling declaring 18 as legal minimum age for marriage. The ruling followed a hard-fought case in which two former young brides sought to have the Marriage Act and Customary Marriage Act declared a breach of the new constitution. But the Mdimu family has been torn apart by Sophia's death due to pregnancy-related complications. Her body was in a mortuary, while her family and the family of her husband wrangled over her death and burial before she was laid to rest last weekend. Sophia's family says she was due to give birth at home, and her husband would not let her seek treatment when complications emerged, so she died. This religious sect is notorious for claiming that child immunization or conventional medical assistance run contrary to their beliefs. The Juan Marange Apostolic Church is among more than 1,000 apostolic sects in the country and is one of the biggest, with a reported 1 million plus members. The practice of child marriage is rampant in the sect and part of a patriarchal system which some view as criminal and sanitized pedophilia. Sophia's husband, Samuel Taguta, declined to give his side of the story and caused Sophia's parents hit a brick wall. Clement Mdimo, the brother of Sophia's father, says the issue has torn his family apart, as his brother appears to have tried to cover up the issue of Sophia's premature marriage and the circumstances surrounding her death. He claims there was an effort to bury the girl with her unborn child in a womb without a postmortem. Observers say the case reveals the conspiracy of silence in the communities where child marriages arrive. Human Rights Watch reports the Zimbabwe Council of Churches and the Apostolic Christian Council of Zimbabwe acknowledging that the practice is more prevalent among apostolic followers more than any other religious groups. The Juan Marange sect, which originates in the Bocha area of Manicaland, is especially notorious. Child marriage is a catalyst for poverty and disrupts the education and future economic viability of daughters. In child marriages, customary law seems to have been allowed to prevail over legislative instruments. Perpetua Dube, a lawyer, speaks on the matter.
If you look at Section 70, for instance, of the Criminal Code, it criminalizes extramarital sexual relations with a young person, which implies that if it is marital sexual relations with a young person, then there is no criminal offense. So there is just, in my view, a need to harmonize the law and adjust the statutes and bring them in line with the Constitution and with the pronouncements by the highest court on constitutional matters or on the issue of child marriages, and in my view, indirectly on the issue of sexual relations.
Legal experts say the legal age for marriage is 18 and that the Constitution should hold sway over customary law, noting a provision that says any tradition or custom that is inconsistent with the Constitution is invalid. According to UNICEF, more than 32% of girls are married before the age of 18 and 12% are married before the age of 15. In Zimbabwe, approximately 1 in 3 girls is married before 18. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Press Conference USA. This week, a newsmaker interview with first-term Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger, a Democrat from the state of Virginia. We'll talk with her about a range of domestic and foreign policy issues, from immigration reform to the U.S. role in the world. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dyke, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.